welcome back to Mommy Ever After, Once Upon a Time in the Land of Mom. I want to welcome you back to the podcast, as this is now our second episode. And first and foremost, I really want to thank you for being here, whether this is your first time listening, or especially for those of you who are returning after the first episode. I didn't say it at the time, but I did write about it in my blog post. But that first episode was actually a stream of conscious 26-minute blab fest where I turned on my recorder on my little iPhone. I had no notes, no framework, and I just spoke very freely about what I wanted to accomplish and the messages that I wanted to start to convey to you, whether I know you, whether we know each other through the blog and the cyber world, or whether this is your first time even hearing of Mommy Ever After. And so I appreciate so much all of the wonderful, positive, supportive feedback that I've gotten since I first published that podcast. I will say that the feelings that I've had are very reminiscent to those that I had back in 2010 when I first published my first blog post, because that was so scary. I was putting myself out there in a really big new way. And although I've now established myself as a blogger and a writer, this is totally new. I've never done podcasts before, but what I do know is that I love making human connections. I love talking to people. Oftentimes, this can be to a fault, where a short conversation will turn into an hour-long conversation, but by the end of that hour, that person is probably a new friend. And so I can't really hate on that too much, because it's a really wonderful way of being. So thank you so much for returning, for the support, and for just being here right now. And I was really thinking, quite honestly, I was organically inspired to record this podcast because I was doing some nesting. And I will explain the context. So today was a snow day. It was supposed to be the blizzard named Stella, and yet it was more like a very icy 5 inches of snow, which made it very easy for snowball making and snowman building. But it wasn't quite the huge, epic snowpocalypse that I had expected. But in any case, we had the whole family home, which is always such a pleasure for us. And it's funny because I left a note on my daughter's bedside table last night so that she would wake up to see it. And it said, you know, get ready, no school tomorrow. Here's our snow day agenda. And tonight, actually, before bed, I said, okay, we need to check in and see if we've had a good snow day. So here are the markers of a good snow day. And if we've done them, say check. So I said, you know, did you get to wake up and have a home diner? And she said, check. And I said, did you get to snuggle up and watch one of your favorite movies? And they both said, check, because we watched Willy Wonka, or actually Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. And I had the ability to post one of the funniest ever Instagram videos of my son, who is very shy, just letting loose and dancing to the Augustus Gloop song. And I can't stop watching it and I can't stop laughing. But pardon that aside, I went back and I said to my children, you know, did you build a snowman? And they said, check. I said, did you throw a snowball? And they said, check. And I said, did you jump off a swing into a big pile of snow? And they said, check. And I said, did you make hot cocoa? And they said, check. And so I said, oh, well, guess what, guys? You had a successful snow day. And that was one of those good mom moments. But once they went to bed, I think having been cooped up all day, I started to go into nesting mode, wanting to, you know, clean up after everything. And so one of the things I did was go into my closet and start to just kind of refold the piles of shirts that I have. I love, if you follow me in any way, you will see that I love creative and clever and oftentimes vintage graphic tees. Today I actually wore a t-shirt that said Laura Marion High School, which is the name of my high school, class of 1967. Obviously that was not my graduating class, and so I'm really into those shirts. And was folding a bunch of shirts, and I put my hands on this one shirt that is pink and white striped. And as I was folding it, my mind started to go back to the time four years ago. It's amazing to think about it that way. 4 years ago, when I was wearing that shirt in a very different place in my life. I should preface this next little segment, I should say, segment of this segment, by saying that I have a very keen memory. And this is also one of those blessing and curse type things. So I have a very detailed memory, and I also have a special thing for dates. I think that I fall somewhere on the lower level of the spectrum of the whatever it is that the condition or gift, whatever you want to call it, of people who have like the equivalent of a photographic memory, but for specific dates. So I can tell you the day or the date in history that I first heard a certain song or what I was wearing on a specific date, but it's not 100%. So I'm not like Mary Lou Henner, for example, who I know has that gift, but I do have an incredible memory. And so to me, there are so many things that I find so evocative in life, whether they're smells or different visuals or like tonight, something like a shirt. And so I was folding this shirt and I was thinking, this reminds me of finding out that I was pregnant with my son. And so I'm going to, as I said last time, I was, you know, dipping my toe in, but I'm going to dive into part of the story that is the hard story. If you've ever checked out my blog, you will see that I have it divided up into three categories. A happy story, which is everything before, everything with my daughter, you know, leading up to even getting married and starting a family. So the happy story is everything, you know, pre-2013. And then it's a hard story, and then a hopeful story, which is what I write about now. And so that is also the way my book is structured currently, pending any changes. And so here I'm going to be talking a little bit about the hard story. And so I don't mean to be a buzzkill, especially so early on. I promise there's going to be a lot of comedy, whether it's intentional or unintentional, in this podcast. But here is something that you have to know about me, basically, in order to understand this blog and my movement and the passion that I have for advocacy. So in the winter of 2013, we had just moved into our new house, our former new house. We've since moved again. But it was the house that we thought we were going to be in forever, in the neighborhood in which my husband and I both grew up and around the corner from where my parents still live now. And we found this awesome house that needed to be fixed up, which is something that I love to do, and had the best next door neighbors ever, and we still love them so much, and so we're so lucky. But we moved into our house, and we had a lot more room than our small and charming first home. And our daughter was turning 3, and so my husband actually was leading the charge and saying, maybe we should start to think about number 2, meaning baby number 2. And it's funny because I had been kind of sensitive to the fact that people around me were having their second children. So all of my daughter's friends in her class, who were the older siblings, were big brothers and big sisters, especially during that year of school. And so they were bringing in pictures of their little babies, and my daughter was like the only one who didn't have that. So I actually had her bring in a picture of her new room and her awesome Pottery Barn teen rug. And that got a lot of attention, I'll say. So I was pretty proud of that and psyched about that. But I started to feel some external pressure, but I didn't really feel the internal pressure, or I hate to say this, but even real desire like I had for my first time around when I really wanted to get pregnant, and it was so important to me, and I felt like it was so time sensitive, and I wanted it to happen yesterday. When it came to the second time around, I was kind of more chill about it and even hesitant, because as I teased in the first episode of this podcast, my first birth story was certainly quite the event. That's actually what I thought I was going to talk about in this next episode, but as I said, this came up just so naturally that I thought that's what I should go with. So because of my daughter's birth and because of our relationship and how close I was and am to my daughter, I just felt like, you know, how do we figure this out? How do we add a member to our family? How do I deal with being pregnant again? How do I deal with the anxiety of something potentially, you know, happening with a C-section and being so concerned because I was already a mother for my daughter and she needed me and all of this? I was kind of a mess about it, to be honest. And then I became less of a mess and more just indifferent. And then finally I was like, okay, let's just do this. So we moved in January we settled in January, I should say. And in February, I was aware that I was in my fertile window. Again, I will say maybe slightly oversharing for a second podcast, but you know, that's just how I roll. And so I actually sent a text message to my husband that was not at all romantic or enticing, but I basically told him what I just told you. And so my son was conceived in a one-shot deal. I, again, was not so motivated. So I was like, you know, whatever happens, happens. And then I kind of had a feeling that I was pregnant because there are certain signs that point to that. And I took a pregnancy test and it came back negative. I took it a little early. It came back negative. And it's funny because once I took the pregnancy test and once I was on board with the idea of being pregnant again, I was really impatient about it. I was like, why is this, I want this to happen now. Like, I just want it to materialize. And when I got that negative test, I was bummed. So then that was a good indication for me, or an indicator that, okay, I think I'm ready for this. But I still kind of felt like I was pregnant. And I very vividly remember, as I said, I have this memory, actually being in a striped shirt and sitting at a different striped shirt, I should say, sitting at my kitchen table and talking to my mom and just saying, like, you know, I know the test is negative, but I just feel pregnant. And she was a little skeptical, I'll say. So I'm going to call her out on that right now. But I just knew. I just had this like weird, I guess it's that mommy gut, mommy instinct. And I also felt as though, this is actually a very like weird little quirky thing that I'm going to share, but I felt like my belly button was kind of protruding more than normal, which is going to sound so weird, but normally I have like a very innie. And so this is really getting very exciting here. And so I felt like, oh, well, like maybe I'm just, my body's changing or something like that. But I, in any case, decided to take a second test. And of course, I decided to do so when my husband was out and unreachable for several hours. So I was home alone with my daughter. It was March 2nd, as of course I remember this, and March 2nd of 2013, my husband was at a brunch, and my daughter and I sat in the bathroom, and I did the old home pregnancy test, and I saw a line come up, and it was so weird because it was like the line on the left, the right side, when the control is the line on the left side. And so I was like, wait, there's something weird here because the control line isn't on the right side. And then I realized, like, oh my God, I see the control line coming up, but there already is a line. That's two lines. Like, holy moly, I'm pregnant. And I think I said it out loud. I think I was like, oh my God, I'm pregnant. And my daughter looked at me and she was like, I'm Cinderella. So that's one of those moments that I will never forget. And it was really cool because I didn't get to tell my family about my pregnancy with my daughter in a really cool, creative way because of circumstances that I'll share later. But this way, this time I was like, you know, I'm going to do this. So my husband got home from brunch and I had my daughter have a gift wrapped for him, and she handed him the gift and inside was a positive pregnancy test. And so that was super exciting. He was like so psyched and we were both together like, oh my God, I can't believe we're doing this. And I was so excited. I thought, oh my goodness, I'm having a sibling for my daughter. I was convinced that it was a girl. Totally convinced it was a girl. I'm one of two girls. My mom is one of two girls. I just had spent, not to gender stereotype, but I'd spent the past 3 years or the last 3 years prior to that, basically in tutus at least 35% of the time. And so to me, it was like, this is, you know, my daughter's going to have a little sister. Like, this is so exciting. And I was able to tell different family members in different ways. And the first person I told was my sister. We FaceTimed with her from New York. And then we asked my dad to come over and help us with something on our new mantle and check out new sconces, because in our family, that would be a normal thing to do. Like, hey, dad, come over, check out my new mirrored sconces. And on the mantle, there was a test. So he was so excited. And my mom was actually traveling at the time, but I called her and got to tell her. So it was just very exciting. But from like day one and a half, I will say, like, I was excited for a good solid day. But by the middle of the next day, I started to have anxiety. And this was so weird because I didn't experience that same kind of anxiety during the first pregnancy. And as I mentioned, again, during the first episode here, I did experience prenatal anxiety during my first pregnancy with my daughter, but it was in a way that was keeping me really vigilant. So it kept me like on the straight and narrow in terms of pregnancy, like do's and don'ts and things like that, but it didn't keep me up at night and I didn't worry obsessively or have intrusive thoughts or like really, really doubt things. It was more like, I want to make sure I'm doing this right, and I may ask the OB some crazy questions. But with my son, I was like, had this impending sense of like doom, or like this, something was going to go wrong. And this baby that I wasn't even sure that I was ready for all of a sudden became everything to me, and I was so scared that something was going to happen. And I remember one time I was teaching at the time, and a kid came and like ran to me for a big hug and knocked me. And it was very, very, very early on. Like, you know, I was probably 5 or 6 weeks pregnant and I was so scared. Like, oh my God, let's say they hurt the baby. And I knew the biology of it and I knew how protected a baby is in a little sack. And, you know, the kid was little. He couldn't have hit me that hard, but I just was so scared. And that was even scared for a reason. Otherwise, other times I was just scared for no reason. And so I called the OB again. And I remember speaking to the nurse practitioner there and saying, you know, I'm really concerned. I've had my positive pregnancy tests. There's no reason to believe that I'm not pregnant. I'm having pregnancy symptoms, but they may be a little bit less noticeable today. Like, I'm feeling a little bit less morning sick today. And so are my HCG levels dropping? Because at this point, I had not even gotten a blood test to confirm the pregnancy. I had not gotten, you know, multiple tests to make sure that my levels were rising appropriately. And I absolutely had not had an ultrasound. So I was just banking on the whatever brand, probably some kind of budget brand knowing me, pregnancy test that shows the two lines. And that's how I was banking that I was on the fact that I was pregnant. So I asked the nurse practitioner at that time if I could come in and just get my blood work drawn. And she said to me something that I now look at as being maybe not the most compassionate answer, which was, you know, as long as nothing's going wrong, like as long as you're not seeing like bright red blood, bleeding, you know, heavy bleeding, then you're probably fine. And so, of course, all I was doing was obsessing about the fact that I was going to start seeing blood. And I also got no reassurance. So she probably should have just, for my peace of mind, brought me in and done some blood work. It doesn't really seem to me like that would be a lot of skin off of her back. But in any case, not that I'm bitter at all about this, but I continued to worry for another week or so. And I remember I went out to dinner with a group of moms, and we used to have this monthly sushi tradition where we'd go out for sushi. And it was three other women who were all mothers. And there was one mom to whom I was very, very, very close, and we were confidants and really kind of raised our first children together. And so we drove together, and she knew about the pregnancy. I couldn't hide it from her. It was like that kind of friend. And I was apparently uncharacteristically quiet at dinner, which meant I probably talked a normal person's amount. So for me, it was quiet, and they were kind of, the other women who didn't know were kind of picking up some vibe from me, and I reassured them everything was fine, and I just was not yet ready to share the news with them. But on the way home with my friend, I drove, and I dropped her off in her driveway, and I burst into tears. And we sat in her driveway, and I said, "I'm so scared. I'm so scared that something's going to go wrong." And I remember that she said to me, like, "Nothing's going to go wrong. It's going to be okay. But, you know, if something does go wrong, it wasn't meant to be. You know, so that's like nature's way of saying it wasn't meant to be," which is a totally compassionate response and right on the money, but also a very difficult thing to hear when you're facing anxiety and suffering from the anxiety that I was, because I was thinking, like, you know, I didn't hear the whole everything's going to be okay. I didn't hear the whole like science part of it. I just heard the, but if, you know, then, and filled in those blanks with all of the scariest possible scenarios. And so I wasn't doing so well. And I then was, I think, six and a half weeks pregnant or so, and it was St. Patrick's Day. And that's why I'm talking about this right now, because it was literally this week, 4 years ago, that this was all happening. And that's what really went through my mind as soon as I touched that pink shirt that I was folding earlier this evening. St. Patrick's Day, my family does not really celebrate. We are not Irish. I totally support it. I just don't celebrate. So we were ordering in Sunday night Chinese food from Chinatown. And long story short, we're hanging at my parents' house, and I just ran to the bathroom, and all of a sudden I saw some spotting. And I will not be inappropriate here, or I'll let us get to know each other a little better before I share too much information. But I will say that I was experiencing what is considered to be a normal level of spotting during pregnancy. However, two things. I had not had any spotting during my first pregnancy. And second, as I said, the nurse practitioner said, you know, just look out for any blood. She was not talking about this kind of blood, but of course I see this and I panicked. I was so alarmed. I was so upset. I was so scared. And I, you know, called my mom in, called my husband in, and my mom reassured me by saying, you know, she had experienced the same thing during her two healthy pregnancies with me and with my sister, but my fear could not be assuaged. I was really, really scared. So in the case of anything during pregnancy, you kind of have to like just call the doctor. Of course, this is Sunday night, so no doctor is working. So I had to call the on-call physician. And the physician who happened to be on call was not my doctor, was not from my practice, and it wasn't someone that I knew. And she called me back, and I explained to her what was happening and the fact that my pregnancy symptoms were, you know, still going strong. I was feeling nauseated and I had other symptoms. And her response to me was also not the most compassionate. She said, basically, you're either having a miscarriage or you're not. So there's nothing we can really do about it over the phone, or there's nothing we can really figure out over the phone. So you can either wait, you know, wait until tomorrow and call your doctor in the morning, and he'll let you know, he'll bring you in, I'm sure, for some like blood work and an ultrasound. I mean, this is what the doctor is saying to me as I am freaking out because I'm bleeding while pregnant and anxious. She's like, you know, so we can either, you know, have your doctor see you tomorrow, or if you're really worried about it, go to the emergency room. So I basically booked it to the emergency room. Fortunately, you know, we were with my parents. They were able to watch my daughter. And it's St. Patrick's Day. in the emergency room at night. People had been acting a fool that day, and so it was packed. There were like all these drunken people that had gotten into bar fights and stuff, and I didn't even have a room because it was so crowded. So I was in the hallway, and I remember that the techs there and the nurses were, you know, drawing blood and like giving me the IVs and things in the hallway of the emergency room, not even in a room. And I was sitting there feeling so scared, so powerless. And my husband was there, you know, to hold my hand, but there was nothing that he could really do except for just support me. And I had no answers. And so I waited and spoke to a physician who said, you know, well, basically the same thing. Hopefully this is all just normal spotting, but we'll check you out. We will do blood work and we will give you an ultrasound. So let me just tell you that typically, or I should say with my first pregnancy and from what I know from other friends and people who have had babies, when you have your first ultrasound, it's really exciting and you're in the doctor's office, and depending on what stage of pregnancy you are in, you know, you either see a little grain of rice or you see a grain of rice with a little flickering heartbeat. With my daughter, I got to see her like every week because of the doctor that I was seeing, and so I saw her as a grain of rice. I saw the flickering heartbeat. I saw her then as a little teddy bear, like 8 weeks pregnant, with her spine that looked like a tiny little train track. I saw her, you know, like when she started to develop these like little extremities. And then I, of course, had like the, not of course, but I had the 12-week sequential screen ultrasound with her. But I had like seen her tons of times by that point. With this pregnancy, my first ultrasound experience was in the emergency room. And when you have an ultrasound done in the emergency room, which I hope you have not experienced, but if you have experienced, you'll know you're with a tech. And so they can't give you any information because they're not radiologists. They read a report, they perform your ultrasound examination, and they can kind of freeze the screen on certain images, I guess, and then they send all the information to the radiologist, and the radiologist then reads the report and sends it back. So imagine I'm like in literally one of the most vulnerable states you can be in, having, I'll just leave it at, it was an internal ultrasound, and very uncomfortable while this woman is examining me, looking at a screen that is turned away from me, and seeing whether or not, and she is seeing whether or not I had a viable baby growing inside of me, and she wasn't able to tell me. And so I'm like, can you just give me like a wink? Can you give me like a little nudge here? Like, you know, even just like a general, it'll all be okay, or something like that, that wouldn't get her into trouble, but to just like to give me some kind of signal, like, yeah, there's a baby in there, and yeah, there's a beating heart. Nothing. I got nothing from this woman. So I interpreted that, of course, because I was catastrophizing everything, that there was something wrong. So I sat in the, I think I was finally moved to a room, and I sat in that room for what seemed like an eternity, of course. And then the doctor came in and he said, well, you know, the levels look like the HCG levels are normal for this stage of pregnancy. And the heart rate was 123. And I was like, wait. So like, back up. There is a heartbeat. Like, there is a heart rate. And he's like, oh, yeah. You know, the baby looks totally fine. It looks like a little Cheerio right now. That's how he described it. And so I'm like, can I see? And a medium-sized wave of relief washed over me because the baby was viable at that time. There was a heartbeat. Things were growing properly. The size measured appropriately. The heart rate, it's funny because there are old wives' tales when predicting the sex of a baby. And it was slower than my daughter's heart rate, I remember, from the early ultrasounds. But that's one of the old wives' tales. They say, like, if heart rate's over 140, then it's a girl. Under 140, it's a boy. I don't think that these are necessarily true, but my pregnancies were pretty on the money when it came to those old wives' tales and what sex the baby was. So it was like this lower but still totally normal, healthy heartbeat. And I didn't get to hear it. I didn't get to see it. But what I got to see was a still from the looking over the shoulder of this doctor in the emergency room on his computer, this picture of this Cheerio that I couldn't really make out. But I left there with a couple of things. A sense that my baby was okay. An appointment with my OB for the next day. The knowledge that I was holding papers that said my diagnosis was possible miscarriage, and a horrible case of anxiety and tremendous worry. And when you are worried about a pregnancy and possibly losing that pregnancy, holding paperwork that says possible miscarriage as the diagnosis, not like spotting, but everything was fine, but, you know, instead those really, really scary words and telling you, of course, to look out for heavy bleeding or other symptoms, that was terrifying for me. And I will never, ever forget that night, not just the hospital, but going back to my parents' house, because that's where my daughter was sleeping. And I insisted on sleeping there because I wanted to be close to her. Because for some reason, I felt like as long as I could be close to her, then things would be okay. And I will tell you that I'm nearing the end of this little chapter of the hard story, because I'm going to save the rest of the story for another time. I know I've been speaking totally off the cuff for a while, but this is where the story really changed. And on that day, on St. Patrick's Day of 2013, my life changed and has not been the same ever since. And in some ways, you know, in a miraculous, beautiful, wonderful way, because I can say to you, that's the day that I first found out that I had a viable baby growing inside of me who is now my son. And as I was telling you, made me laugh earlier by dancing to the Augustus Gloop song in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. But as I speak to you right now, to be totally honest, I'm welling up with tears, because that was also a day, I think it was the last time of my before story, you know, of the happy part of the story. And not that there isn't a lot of happiness and wonderful thing, there are not a lot of wonderful things and that there's not a lot of joy now, but this was a real turning point in my life. And I went from having extreme anxiety about my pregnancy to what was obviously a defense mechanism, because I then went numb to my pregnancy and to the baby growing inside of me. And saying those words out loud is very hard. And it really plays into all the things like mom guilt and like just the tremendous emotions that I've experienced since then. And, you know, the fact that I love my son dearly and would never want to even imagine a moment of life without him. But at that time, I was not excited about him anymore or about this baby. I didn't yet know that he was a boy. I wasn't really even feeling scared. I just felt nothing. And that was almost worse than the anxiety. And so I'm going to put an ellipsis there, because you have this, you know, sensitive person here who feels so much and who was feeling so, so, so much. And then all of a sudden I felt nothing. And even though I found out that there was something and that something was great. And so this is why I do what I do and I share what I share. Because I know that I'm not the only one. I know that I'm not the only one who's been caught off guard by something during pregnancy, whether it's been some kind of diagnosis, whether it's been some sort of spotting or whatever it is. And I know how that can affect people. And in some ways, it just makes them, you know, more vigilant. In some ways, it makes them seek a higher level of care and hopefully more compassionate care. And for some people, it does something along the lines of what it did to me, which is it makes them, as it made me, you know, slightly numb and not feeling as magical as you would expect to feel. And that has its whole own set of emotions and feelings and things to deal with, and baggage, I should say. But I will get back to that. But I'm willing and open to sharing all these things because I want to make you, as I've said, feel less alone. And so if you're someone who's experienced a similar story, obviously this will resonate with you. If you're a mother, you know, I think that this will resonate with you on an even deeper level. And I want to be very clear about something. As I said in the first podcast, am very sensitive to medical health issues of all kinds. And I'm very, very sensitive to pregnancy loss. It is something that is very close to me as well. And so I do not take anything that I've said tonight lightly. When I talked about my fear of miscarriage, the fact that I was diagnosed with possible miscarriage, and the fact that I ended up having a healthy baby after a healthy pregnancy, I do not take that for granted. I do not devalue in any way anything that I've said in terms of its weight and how it could be hard or triggering. And so if that's the case, reach out to me, talk to me. I'm here for you. Like, make sure that if I've triggered emotions in you and it's hard, that's why I'm here. As I said before, email me, Rebecca@mommyeverafter.com. Reach me on the blog, direct message me on Instagram. You can find me. I'm on Facebook, you know, Twitter. You can find me. But I will say that for those who are not moms or not even women, I think that we all as humans have been thrown curveballs, and they really do affect us. You know, things that are maybe sudden or unexpected or mixed blessings, those are sometimes really hard to untangle because we feel like something bad happens to bring us something good, but it's confusing because the hurt is still there, even though there's good. And that sometimes makes it even more challenging to kind of like decode and tease apart. But I think that all of us hopefully can bond in this way. And I wish that we couldn't, because I wish that life were easier for everyone. And that's my goal, is to try to make people feel less, make you feel less alone in this journey. But we've all been thrown things and had things, unfortunately, either given to us or thrust upon us that have been either less than ideal or, as I said, just unexpected. And so hopefully you can relate to that aspect of the story, no matter where you are in your life. And just know that someone else has been through it and has had the gamut of emotions, from extreme, extreme emotion to a lack thereof. And so there is hope and rebuilding from that. And I guess that's the takeaway that I would love for you to be able to have after listening to this, is that with the proper ability to identify this, a support system, help in all different forms, whether it's a hug from a best friend, depending on the situation, to an actual treatment team and therapy or whatever it is, depending on what the case may be, or you're talking to your boss about something that's happened at work. I just advocate for you to seek help for yourself, because you deserve to have a better life. You deserve for things to be less hard. And we cannot control the outside world and life circumstances. And so many times things seem so unfair. And there have been so many times where I throw my hands up in the air and I said, I said this just yesterday, but I did the best that I could. And I was referring to a situation where things went in a way that I just did not expect them to go. And I thought that I had kind of set myself up for success in a certain situation. And all I could say is I did the best that I could. And I'm sure that in your life, in your lives, you're doing the absolute best that you can possibly do. And whether that's for yourself or your family or all of the above, I just hope that you can take some solace in the fact that we're all in this together and that my mission here is to have a community of empathy and sympathy at times and compassion and true warm care, because sometimes I actually feel like I'm just one giant heart walking around, and I feel for you, I'm here for you, and I appreciate you taking the time to listen to this very personal and not so uplifting story, because for me, it's my truth and it's the beginning of something that really changed me and shaped me, but it's why I'm here today and able to share this with you. So St. Patrick's Day for me is not about green beer. It's not about green bagels. It's not about partying, unfortunately. Maybe someday it will be. But right now, in this moment, it's about a striped shirt that's pink and white. And that when I touch it, brings me back to a time 4 years ago. And it shows me how time heals, how things can change very quickly, and to have gratitude for where I am right now in my life. And I really hope that that does not sound trite, because I know that when things are hard, the last thing that you want to hear is, but you have so much to be thankful for, but you have so many things that are going so wonderfully in your life. What could be wrong with you? And I've written about this so many times, you know, you have such a charmed life. What could possibly make you sad? And that's the worst thing to hear. So I'm not saying that in any way. I'm saying to you, if something is feeling miserable in your life or feeling less than good, I'm sorry. And that sucks. And I can completely relate. And I really wish I could take that away for you. But right now, I'm going to sit here and touch my pink and white striped shirt. And then I'm going to go and kiss my kids goodnight as they're cuddled up together in my daughter's bed. And when I look at my son, I will know that I went from not being sure if I even was ready for him to then being so desperate for him to be safe, to worrying about him, and then to feeling nothing, and now to feeling everything. And that is what the land of mom here in Mommy Ever After in our community, that's what it's all about. Thanks so much for your time again. Be well. I hope that you can celebrate this St. Patrick's Day in whatever way feels true to you. And I can't wait to be able to speak to you again. Thanks so much and have a great night. Bye.